The Exhibitor Now podcast is your source for the latest news and interviews with thought leaders in the trade show and live event world. Hosted by Kimberly Gischler, Chief Content Strategist and Associate Publisher of Exhibitor Magazine, and by Mike Morrison, Industry Podcaster and National Sales Director at WS Display. Give us 30 minutes and we'll give you everything you need to know now.
Need a presenter? Your Event Audio has you covered. Closed circuit audio equipment with turnkey operation at your trade show booth, live event, or private event. YourEventAudio.com is the place to go. DJ services, MC talent, and a whole lot more. Check out YourEventAudio.com today.
Well, let's wrap up the month of April here on the 26th, 2024 with the Exhibitor Now podcast. I'm Mike Morrison, National Sales Director, WS Display, and co-host of the show. And if you're watching on video, you see there on the opposite side of the screen, Kim Gischler, who's the Chief Content Strategist for Exhibitor Group, as well as the Associate Publisher for Exhibitor Magazine. Very interesting show today. For the first time, I think, in our over a year and a half, almost a year and a half's worth of shows, we're not interviewing anybody today. We're going to talk content. She's the content strategist. Why not talk content? Why don't we talk strategy? Why don't we talk a lot of things about Exhibitor Group today? But before we get into that, we're going to talk about a few bullet points that we always do. And some of these points, you may sit there and stare at me and go, Mike, what does that have to do with trade shows, live events, and experiential marketing? You'll be amazed, actually, as we talk about these, how applicable they really are. Let's dive, Kim, first of all, into the TikTok ban. Everybody's screaming about the White House signing the bill that finally says, you got 12 months, TikTok, in order to tell your home company ByteDance to find some U.S. ownership. There are concerns, at least from the FBI, the Federal Trade Commission, and obviously lawmakers, that TikTok, their home team, is using this from a communistic government standpoint, stealing our information, sharing it with their government. So that's my question to talk about on the front end. Is it really TikTok and the little videos that come out, or is it possibly a strained relationship between the U.S. and China in the business and governmental world?
Well, I have no clue. But I love that you brought it up and you thought I would have a clue on this.
I thought you were going to come out with some. Yeah,
I will tell you from a person, from an event perspective, I always have questioned TikTok for a long time, just from a business point of view, because, you know, with everything else going on, we're very sensitive to the people that we do business with. So we want to protect everyone that we do business with, especially the publishing side and anything we're rolling out, that we want to make sure that everyone's protected in some essence as much as we can do. I'm not, from a business standpoint, TikTok is probably not one of my vehicles that I would go to, but we did do some reels out there for Exhibitor Live this year, which was very well received. We had a great fun with it. So, you know, I think they have to do what they have to do. Is it something that I'm going to lose a lot of sleep over? Probably not. If I was a 23-year-old person and I was making a lot of money off of it, I'd be pretty worried. So it can go a lot of different ways. To me, it's of all the things I need to worry about, probably this isn't one of them. From my very small view of what I'm dealing with, you might have a different opinion because you're in the more of the world of a surrounding than I am.
It's interesting you said that. I do have a different perspective from the supply side of this industry. We have a very symmetric relationship, a tremendous relationship. As a matter of fact, almost 100% of our suppliers are in China for our company.
Yeah.
So there is that. There was the tariff that came out back, you know, 19 or so, 8, or 17 actually, the 25% with imports and everything. But what got me, and if you'll notice, I got a pen in my hand, and I've always had a pen in my hand and, you know, touch my face or do whatever. It's a tick that I have. But here's the thing. This is a brand new WS pen that we give away as swag as one of the items. I noticed at the show just in Cincinnati recently, it has this little, you can't see, it's a little ridge right there on the side of the clip. It's like, what does that say? And I had to get a magnifying glass just because I'm old and put it down. And it literally says China on it. And of course, then I began to look everywhere in my office at everything that's sitting here. And of course, you know where I'm going with this. Everything is either made in China or everything has components within the big U.S. made product that has components that come from China. We can't live without China. As strained as these relationships are, every business owner watching this podcast or involved in our exhibitor group world, you can't live without them. So I'm concerned about the strain, quote unquote strain right now, even though I understand it and I get it and even parts of me agree with it. You know, how far does this go? It's something to think about. And something to talk about maybe with your legislators as you think more and more about it if this continues down this road. It's an interesting, maybe we should do a poll. Maybe we'll do that for the show and have some feedback. Love the feedback from our listeners. Let's change gears and talk about, we talked last week about airlines. We're going to talk again this week because, boy, the Department of Transportation dropped a big one on all airlines now saying that passengers will get automatic cash refunds for canceled or significantly delayed flights under new rules from the DOT. The changes to take effect in the next 6 months are aimed at eliminating headaches and haggling. God knows we all go through it. Fees for checked bags that are lost or not delivered within what a reasonable 12-hour period of a domestic flight must be refunded immediately. Passengers who pay for Wi-Fi or in-flight entertainment, and it doesn't work, get a reimbursement. I mean, common sense stuff, you would think, but man, how many times have we had to argue over stuff like that, Kim?
Well, I mean, it's amazing the customers, they're so into customer service, but they're really not. It just fascinates me. And these are very simple things that can be done, and it doesn't mean anything to anyone, but it means a lot to the customer, and they could save a lot of face if they would just do some of the things. I think it's long overdue. We should have been able to get instant, you know, it would go in your bucket. It would go in that reusable bucket that's airy fairy, that if you're not on that bucket of missed trips or refunds or whatever that you can use by a certain date. You know, we look at it all the time because we fly all the time. Sure. But if you're a mom and pop and you just fly once a year with your family and you have a refund in there and you forget about it because you don't know when your next trip is or you have to use it by a certain time, you're going to lose it. So it's really great that they're doing instant refunds, and I think it's important for them to do it, especially for the people that are luxury travelers and they don't leisure travel and they don't get to do it a lot. And it's a family of four. Goodness. I mean, think about, you know, you're traveling from Chicago to Anaheim and you're going to Disneyland, and, you know, that ticket alone is horrendous. But then you have flight issues you miss. I mean, it's just common sense. I don't know why it wasn't done a long time ago, but it is what it is.
Common sense, you use that word over government-regulated organization. I went there. I shouldn't have. But it's interesting. Before we switched our last point, I read this morning, the city of Atlanta, who run Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport here, the busiest airport in the nation, has just dropped a law that said, because we have a big problem with homelessness inside of the airport. If you've ever traveled, oh, yes. Because MARTA has a train that comes directly into the terminals. So, you know, there's homeless that jump on that. They come in and they sit there for hours and hours upon end. And, of course, they're panhandling and they're harassing passengers. So now they've dropped a bomb that they are no longer welcome inside of Hartsfield International, will be governed by the police there. Maybe we're seeing some corrective actions. Of course, the homeless advocacy of that is really ugly right now. Everybody's arguing with that statement and that rule and that decision. But when you pay $500 for a ticket, you want to go in there and not be harassed. So there's two sides of the story. I just thought I'd mention that before we go back to D.C. to conclude our front end
today. Well, I don't disagree with that, but I will say there has to be some solution. And we can't just keep moving these poor people around all the time. We need to find a solution. Quit just saying it's a Band-Aid all the time. So
I rip off the Band-Aid and let's fix the issue.
Fix it.
I agreed. Of course, you and I are on the same page with that. But probably not on the same page with D.C., where we're going for finalization of a discussion today. I'm sure everyone heard this week about what the Federal Trade Commission did, especially in our world, regarding bans of non-competes. They are going to ban non-competes in a business and for their respective employees. There is a threshold. It's senior elevated management at a salary, I believe, of $151,000 plus a year, or you have serious say-so about the strategies of a company. So it'll have to be really defined. But your basic employees below that threshold qualify for this new law that's going to affect. The agency did receive about 26,000 comments on the subject, most of them in favor of getting rid of the ban. The rule, which doesn't apply to workers at nonprofits, is to take effect in 4 months unless it's blocked by legal challenges. And we've heard that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has already said, pack a lunch, we're going to challenge it. Good or bad? Non-competes.
You know, I you can argue both sides. I would say right now they're irrelevant. I mean, at a senior level, I would say yes. You should be. I mean, if you're someone from, you know, HP going to a Cisco and you're senior management, obviously that's something that you don't want to have happen. Or, you know, but gosh, you know, there's so many ways around it. It's not. You can have a non-compete, but you could also go out and consult and then come back and they can hire you in a different way. So, I mean, it's airy-fairy. So, yes, you can say it's a non-compete, but I think it's a lot of stress from not a lot of return. And if you're a person that's mid-management and you're going to another company because maybe the company you're at is toxic and you don't want to be there anymore and you happen to get picked up, why shouldn't you go? I don't think there should be any holding back, especially in this time where we're all kind of, the world is a crazy place, and just let them do what they want to do.
It's so funny you say that, because I've been involved in two in my last 24 years. You mentioned the independent contractor realm where you go off and you do some consulting. Then you come back. I did exactly that on the first one. The second one, unfortunately, and I laugh about it now because it's always hindsight, but I had one forged. I didn't sign it. But they forged my name to
it. What?
Yeah. Oh, it was not worth going into now. But the bottom line is, Kim, I live in Georgia. Non-competes are not even recognized here. So
and that's a whole other thing. So with all this remote working, so where do you get it from? Because is it based out of the company where the company's based, or is it based out where you live? I mean, so you can go. There's a lot of legalities. I'm just saying, I just don't think they can stick, personally.
I don't. In general, they don't. It depends on the state and depends on all those things you and I just mentioned. But I think it's the right move for the common worker who, you know, doesn't make that kind of money or has those kind of inputs on the strategy of the company. They don't have intellectual property knowledge. They don't really control all of that. They're just looking to jump to a better opportunity. Let them go.
Yeah, but think about this. If you're in Silicon Valley and that $150,000 is the norm of the salary. So you're talking everyone and their mother is going to be having a signed a non-compete. So, I mean, it's geography is a huge issue. So I don't know how they're going to, it's going to be interesting.
It really will be, and it is applicable in our world. And so, we'll kind of watch that and see where it goes. All right, we're going to take a timeout. And when we come back, turning the floor over to Kim, and she's going to tell us everything that is hot and happening with Exhibitor Group that you're going to want to know. Quick timeout. We'll come back with that discussion after this. Attention, trade show and event marketing professionals. Are you ready to take your face-to-face marketing expertise to the next level? Join more than 3,000 candidates currently enrolled in Exhibitor Group's Certified Trade Show Marketer Program. CTSM is corporate America's top source of the industry's best trade show and corporate event training. CTSM Certified Trade Show Marketers enjoy expanded career opportunities, greater respect and authority in their organizations, and earn higher salaries than their acronym-free peers. Learn more, earn more. Visit ctsm.com today.
Are you searching for trade show and event products and services? Find it on Exhibitor Exchange is your complete buyer's guide to trade show exhibiting and events, featuring the trade show industry's top exhibit and display providers. Find it on Exhibitor Exchange is the industry's best shopping and commerce resource for buyers and sellers of exhibit and event products and services. Reaching 20,000 exhibit and event buyers in every print issue of Exhibitor Magazine and 140,000 exhibit and event buyers online each year. Search the listings or list your company today. Learn more at exhibitoronline.com/findit.
Welcome back to the show. And as I mentioned before we took the break, this is a discussion I've been looking forward to, been interested about hearing what's been in the big room, of the negotiating room, the corporate meeting room, boardroom, whatever you want to call it, of senior management at Exhibitor Group, of what's going on, what's coming down the pike. So no better person to discuss that than with Kim. So Kim, take it away.
We're calling this the jibber jab.
Jibber jab. Exhibitor Group jibber jab. We'll put that in the big letters.
Yeah, we'll put that in the title. No, we've been really busy. I mean, so this is, you know, this is my sixth month, I think I've been here. And between myself, David, Dwight, and Monica Myhill, you know, we all came in this kind of all the same time. Monica, I think, is at her fifth month. And you know what they say, it takes you 6 months to really dig in and figure out where you can really be of value. And now we're starting to get, I think they could be happy with it, or they might not be happy with it, but we're starting to dig in and see where we can enhance what we've inherited, so to speak. But the magazine is going on strong. We have got some amazing content in the upcoming issues. The Center of Excellence Awards out there are going to be coming out for people to start working on that. Sizzle Awards are coming out in the end of in the August timeframe. So there's a lot of movement on kind of promotion of what we're doing. As you know, in a couple weeks, I believe, we're going to have Charles on, the Charles and Charles show. So that'll be fun. So we're trying to get more of Charles in front of this group. And I think also, you know, they're starting to find their voice and trying to get more on the thinking about what the magazine really wants to be now and kind of what they want to promote and who their audience really is. So we're doing a lot of fun investigative. I love analytics. I love all the information that goes behind all that and why we make the decisions. So look for more to come on that. And sign up for those awards if you haven't already. That'll be a lot of interesting information. And then on the other side of the house, the EG side, you know, we have the Education Week upcoming. So that is in July, the week of July 14th. So you have the CTM, kind of like the old fast track, was done in three different times of the year. We combined it all one time in Las Vegas for this 1 week. You can just go pound it out, get as many classes as you want to get in, and get as much education as you can do. There's going to be some electives in there as well. So some new things coming in. Some heavy, a little bit on AI touching on there, kind of deep dive into that, how you can use it in your events. We're also going to have some data analytics as well, how you use sponsorships, how you measure it, how you get the reporting to for upper management. So that's important to have. And then also, you know, some other speakers coming in and giving some new content. Just some new flavor to it all. We're trying to figure out how to move it forward.
Can I ask a quick question?
No.
No. Real quick. I don't want to break your train, but.
No, you're fine.
Something popped in my mind because I agree with you. I think reducing it to 1 week of the year makes total sense. It saves money. It saves time. It puts everybody in one location. However, I'm pretty sure you're going to, if you haven't already, you've got the feedback of, I can't be there that week. Because of a show, because of work, because of whatever, maybe PTO, whatever it is. Has there been any discussion that whole week or the important parts of that week can be virtual?
I think they're working on, I don't know if it will be a hybrid kind of version of it for a lot, you know, for that specific week. I think we're going to have, there'll still be e-tracks. You know, we do e-tracks all the time. So she'll have it for that. This is one of those that, we talked about doing digital, and I think we could tape it. Right now, we're kind of playing with just this week and seeing how many people actually attend, see the feedback, because it's so important to get the feedback from it and see if it's worthwhile. You know, July in Vegas, not a lot going on. So we're, you know, your contained audience. It is a week, so we're going to do through the half day on Friday. And we're combining some other things with it. So it's a good point. We are investigating that. It is sometimes, I think it's easier when you're doing the CTSM accreditation digitally as opposed to just doing a discussion topic, because you really need to be in that room when you're doing that. And you want to be interactive with it. A taped one is a lot easier to deal with on education as a, so we're, good question. We are investigating it. There's no answer of it right now. And if I said an answer, Monica might come down and find me. So I don't want to get in that mess. But speaking of content, though, she did put out a call for papers for that week, Education Week. So anyone listening who wants to, you know, look on our site and find that call for papers. We are also doing it. It's a combo. So it's also for Exhibitor Live 2025. So if anyone wants to kind of think about how they can contribute to the education of what we're doing for EL, that would be wonderful. And also think about what is the benefit to the audience when you fill out that information. So what are the key three learnings they're going to take away? That is always the essence of anything that we do. I always love short and sweet, but you know, I'm not the one in doing the curriculum. So it's
define short and sweet.
Well, I think she, if I'm correct, the some of those are 90 minutes and some of them can be an hour, some can be 45. So I think you have a range there. I think we're starting to see a trend on, we've touched on this before, that people are consuming information differently now. So we need to be sensitive to how they are digesting all this. But currently right now, that's kind of what we're thinking. So if you do what I always suggest is make it for an hour where you can step back and cut it back 15 to 30 minutes if needed. And you always want that 15 minute of discussion, but you always want to be interactive. We need to talk with, have that conversation in the room, not at the people for 45 minutes. So always think of that when you're thinking about presenting in those areas.
Good point.
So you got it all written down now, Mike? So when you present, when you get your, bring your thing in, you know what to do?
Yeah, we were just off Mike mentioning, you know, 7 years of podcasting, you know, and there's some people are already introducing their podcast ideas, but just the total methodology of podcasting and all of the good, bad, and ugly that's involved. I'm interested in seeing if anybody has done that so far, because when you have been in the wasp's nest before, you can talk about it and how not to go into it again and things like that, just little things. And so everybody has a story, right? Everybody has their expertise. Does it apply to a CTSM role? That's what you have to ask yourself. And
well, I think you can also, yeah. And I think what the benefit of that kind of discussion is, how do you promote it? What's the business benefit for you to do it? And it has to be a plan in place. And you know, who do you get on to really support your message? And so those are the things that are valuable. And how do you monetize it if you need to?
Lord knows,
or support, you have a sponsorship package. How are you including that part of marketing into your sponsorship package, and how is that relevant? So there's a lot of areas you can touch on. It's just how you flow it.
So and package it together and present it. Absolutely. Yeah. I totally agree with
but
you.
But we're going to be at some other events down the road. You know, we always go to Expo and attend that with David Dubois and Lauren Johnson. They always head out there. And then also IMEX. And I think we do we also do the golf tournament, the Randy. I think you go to that as well.
I do. Mark and I did the podcast there. I'll be doing that. I've done the podcast there since 2014, actually, when I was doing video when I was in B-Matrix. So, yeah, we'll be there. We'll represent Exhibitor Group there. Whether it's, are you coming in for that, or will that be?
That's so far down the road. I don't even know where I'm going this week. So
I had to look at it. I had to actually look at it. We had a client of mine passed away suddenly. And of course, that's what that whole event's all about, is assisting and helping and memorializing those people in our industry. It's a very, very important event. If you've never been, and I'm just quoting Michael Boone here from Coastal, if you don't know, you don't know until you go. Until you go, you don't know. That's or something like that. He paraphrases it. Once you go, you're hooked. You go every year.
Well, it's for a good cause, and it's always a special event. I've heard a lot of amazing things about it. So we will continue on that path. But we kind of are in our planning session for 2025. And as well, you know, we just had a site visit down in San Antonio this week. And we're looking forward to Exhibitor Live next year in San Antonio and trying to make that partnership an amazing event and experience for all those attending. So stay tuned for more on that. But, you know, the logistics around that are really great. They all were very happy on the movement and where the flow is from just from hotel to convention center. So it's things are looking good, Mike.
I got a question.
I
feel like I have the right to ask this.
Okay.
I'm kind of on the outside. I'm in the family, but I'm kind of like third cousin removed down the line, so to speak, because I work for another company. And so I'm a customer. And I think it's safe to say, because I know all the inner works now of what it used to be, what it was for a year or so, and now what it is now. Is it safe to say that it's still trying to carve out the identity of the new Exhibitor Group because it's necessary? It's kind of, you know, the past is the past, and even the most recent past is the past, and now we got to go and cut this new identity, and so you can take that ball and run with it in the future. It's kind of
I don't know if it's necessary. I think it's we have a new purpose. So I would say that it is defining our new purpose and really promoting it and sticking by it and saying that if when you talk about Exhibitor Group or what we are doing or what we are trying to accomplish, that we all can say the same thing. And I think we're not there yet, but I believe in the next 6 months we will get to that point. So I think there's a lot of really fun, innovative, interesting discussions that are happening right now that we can be very proud of where we're going to be by 2025 Exhibitor Live.
I'm looking
That was a very roundabout way of saying, yes, moving forward, we're going to be there.
I got a few years under my belt with this show and with this magazine and with this group, so I kind of know where it was at in its pinnacle. When it was, you know, king of the hill, and then things happened, and then Mark took over, and then an attempt was made, and then now a reattempt has been made, and the future looks bright with the latest attempt. That's kind of, but the ID thing seemed to be a little distorted to this point. So it makes sense that you bring in a strategist, content strategist person who could take that and run with it with the group and make sure that everybody involves on the same page. It makes total sense.
We were trying to be a lot of things to a lot of people and it wasn't working. So I think we've defined who our audience most likely, we're trying to define it. We have a clear understanding. And I think we're moving forward in that path. And when you define that, then everything else kind of just falls into place and you can, and then everyone who supports you has an understanding of where you're moving forward too. So it helps on many levels, the sponsors, this community as a whole that is so committed to this movement that we're the CTSM and everything that we're doing and promotion that we just really want to honor it and we want to keep it going, but we do need to enhance it constantly.
Little steroid effect, kind of inject it with something that boosts it forward.
And it's also, you know, we should be thought leaders and we should be ahead of things, especially with the magazine. So I think the magazine should be a visionary. And then we kind of talk about everything that's going on, what's been promoted in the magazine. So there's an incredible opportunity around that.
One of the things I notice, and I think it's a great thing, and unfortunately your competition is doing it too, but I think it's a good move, is to sub out a lot of those articles to people in the industry who have that ability to write the article, to give their expertise on that subject per se, and be a contributing writer, which kind of eases up the labor issue and frees up Emily and Charles and to concentrate on other content that, you know, that they're not trying to fill pages with, but you can get even more vocalization from outside coming in. That helps. Is that a fair statement?
It is a pair of statement, and it also goes both ways. So we have a lot of content on ours that we would love to share with others. So I think it's once you start getting that collaboration back and forth, which I'd really love having that happen, because I mean, Charles is a wealth of knowledge and Emily is so wonderful in what she does, but we need to have that cross pollination. And the more we do that, the more we can learn from each other. And we all have different audiences. And so we're all touching, some of us are touching the same, but most likely we all have different vehicles we're going through. So there's a lot to share. I agree. I mean, and we are doing more of that. So that's good.
Makes sense, because it's exposure, it's information, it's a combination of a lot of things that makes that effort good. I think it might be to the point of the show where we want to mention there will be a change here at Exhibitor Now, and I am good with it. First of all, my world is about to crank up and get very, it's a little early, I can't divulge all the information, but I'm elevating myself within my company, and we're bringing on more staff, which I'll need to govern and all that. And I'll just stop there with that. But with that comes more time that I need to spend at WS. Therefore, starting in May, we will go to every other week with our show, which allows us to focus on good content, strong content, and not having to struggle at the final minute to come up with talking points because we're all busy. Busy is a key word right now. We're kind of, in my opinion, Kim, from my standpoint, where I'm at, and I'm sure everybody else who's watching can relate to this, we're taking 23, and it's kind of continuing where we thought it would level out, at least for us, and maybe you as well. I know for you guys, it's very busy, but that's what seems to be happening, is we're staying on pace or even busier than we ended in 23.
Yeah, so. And it's unrealistic pace to keep putting pressure on ourselves, and you know, and then we have this challenge that we did get the right people because we want to up the audience as we want to do. So yeah, in May we're gonna, I think the next Friday we're gonna have our, when we talk next week, it's gonna be Amy Calvert, from the head of EIC, and that'll be a wonderful discussion on what's going on with her. And then the week of the 17th we're gonna have Charles Duhigg, and Charles Pappas will be interviewing him. And then you're gonna be on site at Legislative week. I know.
It's a tongue twister.
It is. But you're going to be on site with Emily and David and having that discussion. So it just seems like a more doable.
Yeah, it is. And this will be the first time that we've actually set up a studio in D.C., which is what Tommy wants us to do. And we're really excited about that. We'll bring in our industry folks who want to have a say and speak their piece. And we'll have a compilation effect of interviews with our people edited, and we'll present, as you said, on the 31st.
And that will be interesting because it's a lot of different people on a lot of different topics. And it's I'm really happy that you guys are going to do that. So
it's going to be an editing nightmare. That's what it's going to be.
It will be an editing nightmare, but I'm not doing the editing.
Of course. This dude right here. Excited about that. So, you know, you'll hear
and
that.
And more to come. So we will, you know, as we get closer in May, we'll discuss more things that are going to be happening. But it's all good. We're moving in the right direction.
So there you have it. It's a summary of where the Exhibitor Group is going after a six-month stopping point and evaluation point of where everybody's at. It'll probably get better. It's going to have to get better as we go.
It's going to be better.
Yeah. Well, but we put that pressure on ourselves that we're going to try to make it better. And I think it gets better if you share our show, if you, reply to our shows when we put polls out there or we ask for feedback. Sharing is caring. Somebody stole that. Oh, I stole it from somebody else who said
that's
that.
Deep.
That's deep. Caring is caring. That hurt my head. There's that. And so we will be back next week with the show. It'll be great, as Kim said. And we appreciate you hanging out with us here on this Friday to wrap April up on the Exhibitor Now podcast.